Hello, it's me, Sam Dunnewald. I'm here before the show to tell you that I am kickstarting my first standalone in-print RPG, Band-Aids and Bullet Holes. It's a John Wick-inspired game of bloody revenge inside a tight-knit clique of professional assassins. It's a one-shot capsule game, box set, deck builder, and it's the end result of 3 years of interviews and ideation on all things game design right here on Dice Exploder. If you like the show, if you like how I think about game design, I think you're really going to love this game. I really just want you to know about it. I want you to play it. And you can follow the Kickstarter page right now at a link in the show notes. You can back the game starting May 5th. That's it. Thanks so much for listening, as always. I hope you check out the game. Here's Dice Exploder. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Dice Exploder. Each week, we take a tabletop mechanic and properly screw its brains out. My name is Sam Dunnewald, and this is episode 4 of our Dice Exploder mini-series on love, sex, and romance. In this final episode, hosted by Sharang and Alex, perhaps their climactic episode, they are turning up the heat on sex mechanics, all the way to physical contact, both as a way to simulate sex acts through other kinds of physical touch, touching each other's arms or what have you, and through actual sex acts being used as game mechanics. I think this stuff is fascinating. I think much more broadly applicable to design than you might believe at first blush. And I think also very obviously under-discussed in the way that all things sex and sexuality get under-discussed, at least in the culture that I come from. And I'm gonna leave more details to Alex and Sharon, but there is one more thing I wanted to mention as they close out their time here on the show. While trying to track down all the games Alex and Sharon have talked about throughout the past 4 episodes, so I can link to them in the show notes, many of those games that I know were widely available just a few weeks ago are already hard, if not impossible, to find links to after being delisted from itch.io. In July, some conservative groups pressured the payment processors that Itch uses to ban wide swaths of sexual content from their site. Now, here we are just days later, and we can already see how the precarious history of this hobby is being degraded further by that delisting. I'm glad to have been able to do at least a little work here to help preserve and talk about some more of it. For more about that news, I highly recommend digging into 404 Media's coverage of what happened. And generally speaking, maybe just go out of your way to support some of the people making art like the kind we've been talking about here on the show in this series. All right, shaking off that more dour note, thanks to everyone who supports Dice Exploder on Patreon, and let's get into it. Here, one last time, are Alex Roberts and Sharang Biswas with Physical Touch.
Welcome, everyone, back to our very special mini-series here on the award-nominated Dice Exploder podcast.
And hopefully award-winning by the time
probably
you listen to
probably award-winning, if you think about it. I'm Alex Roberts. I'm here to start the last episode of our series about sex and sexuality in role-playing games. Who is this here with me?
I am Sharang Biswas, and we are excited to have done 4 full episodes all about romance, sexuality, and of course, as Alex reminded me this morning, this is still kind of an intro, right? These 4 episodes, yeah. There's so much to discover, there's so much going on that we probably have no idea about. So, yeah, a 4-episode intro to the world of sexuality, romance, and human intimacy in games. I mean, to be fair, I do teach a class on this, which is way more than 4 hours, so...
It you know. Makes sense, right? Yeah.
Right. But, yeah. So what is our episode about today, Alex?
Well, after talking about quantification and verbalization and objects and symbols, this episode is all about human touch, the idea of the body.
And as a starting point for this, we're using a quote from V.E. Meyerholt, who's a late 19th, early 20th century Russian theater maker and thinker. And he had this technique of theater that he called embodiment. I think it's called embodiment. And he, there's a quote he has that I like using, which is, quote, "If the tip of the nose works, the whole body works." The idea that actors will feel things and be able to translate emotional truths if they're bodily doing things. And this idea is kind of the basis for all of LARP, right? That we are physically enacting things in order to feel certain sensations and emotions that allow us to be immersed within the story and in the emotional truth of the story, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, exactly.
And this idea obviously comes up when we talk about like games and verbs in general. We've talked about this earlier, but today we're going to use this idea to focus more on human touch, this idea of touching another human and what that conveys. And I think for our spotlight mechanic, we're going to think about this mechanic that's very famous in the LARP world called Ars Amandi. And we'll describe that more in a little bit, but keep that in mind that we're talking about Ars Amandi because it kind of talks about a number of, it brings together a number of different things we've thought of in today's episode and for other things. But let's start by talking about human touch in games slightly more generally. You had a really good example for us.
Yeah, I think probably one of the first games I played that was using touch in an interesting way is Shelter by Noah Williamson. You can find it in one of the indie mixtape collections and in You and I, role-playing games for two.
Which I think both of us have games in there.
I don't. You might. Oh, I would believe that. Yeah. Lucian Khan edited.
Yes, I have a game called Hex Ed in there, which is not about sex ed, sadly. It's about wizard school.
But yeah. Well, now I've lost interest. So Shelter is a game. It's like one GM, one player, and it's about a pilgrim going on this long journey to search for their lost love. And you come up with, you know, the various fantastical landscapes that they travel through. But there is one GM, and something really essential to this game is the idea that the GM who's playing all the NPCs, the world around them, right, is the responsive player to the player, conveys all of that physically and not just verbally. And so you're encouraged to, like, I think the examples they use are like, you know, when there's a light rain, you can kind of let your fingertips dapple on their body. It's a game that suggests playing it in an embrace or like in lying down together, sitting close. So it's really interesting because it doesn't have a specific, like, this represents that. It's just like opening this side of the GM role to be physical and to be intimate in that way, in this sort of enthusiastic, consenting way.
Yeah, and I think Shelter straddles the line between TTRPG and LARP, right? Because
definitely,
it isn't, I would say, a full-on LARP as one thinks of LARP, but it, again, does involve using the body. And here it's interesting, right? Because it, unlike a LARP, it doesn't involve you doing actions with your body the way you would in the story. It's actually, it's very different. Like, the rain doesn't actually feel like that, but we're using those fingertip things to create the feeling of that rain, to create a resonance around what rain might feel like and,
exactly,
and sound like, right?
Like a physical narration rather than a physical enactment, right?
And I think we might be able to divide today's examples that we have into these two sort of camps, right? Sort of abstract ones that the physical action activates certain parts of your brain that is poetic, right? Which makes associations with, like, fingers gently running down your shoulders to rain. And let's fuck, right? Which is a thing in some games. And we will talk about that.
That's
right?
Definitely the scale we're going down. But I want you to talk about a couple of Cat Jones games that are extremely relevant to this.
Right. So Cat Jones, disclaimer, is a friend of both mine and Eric Roberts. I'm actually quite close with Cat Jones. She is a very talented sociologist and game designer. And they have two games in the collection Honey and Hot Wax that we've mentioned before in this mini-series. And the first game is a game called You Inside Us, where one of you plays like an astronaut. Not necessarily an astronaut, but to make it simple, an astronaut. And one of you plays an alien parasite that goes inside the astronaut's body and starts living with him, with them, and start talking to them and communicating with them, right? And this game suggests a lot of sexuality. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to be super, super sexual, but it very heavily implies that there's a lot of sexuality. I mean, going inside another human, like, already.
We get it.
And you play the game holding hands, and then, similar to Shelter, doing things to each other to convey sensations. And one of the ideas of the game asks is, what do sensations that feel a certain way to a human feel like to the alien? The example is, can the act of eating tomato soup for the human feel, for example, like a sexy act for the alien? And in the game, you as the human character might then do a certain act, physical act, to the body of your co-player to emulate, like, what does the warmth of the tomato soup feel like going in your body, right? So these kinds of things suggest a sensual sexuality usually so, the game doesn't have to necessarily do that, right? So the game, again, uses this kind of free-form touching, this poetic touch to convey different emotions, different affect, different sensations. But then Cat Jones has another game in the same collection that they co-wrote called The Sleepover, which is a sweet, not very sexy game at all. It's about young teenagers, like 13, 12 years old at summer camp, simply discussing what they know about sex. They're like, oh, I caught my sister making out. Have you ever made out with someone? Have you ever looked at a porn mag? Right? And like discussing that, right? Mm-hmm. And this game has a 7 minutes in heaven mechanic, which is like, if you don't know, it's a very Western/American game that is mythologized in a way that teens play it, where teens go into a closet and you shut the door and then you have 7 minutes to do whatever you want with each other. And the idea is teens often like make out, right? We don't actually have a lot of data, I think, about whether this is played a lot or what happens.
Yeah, or what people are actually doing when the door closes. Yeah.
But in folklore, it's played a lot. And then kids teens make out in the closet. And Kat Jones and her co-designer, I think it's Will Morningstar, have this great mechanic where you play thumb wars. So if Alex and my characters are doing the 7 minutes in heaven game, and if we want to make out, we in real life would play thumb wars. And the thumb wars is used to represent the awkward fumbling that teens who've never had romantic experience have while trying to make out with each other for the first time, right? So here, unlike this, the first two examples, which is a very freeform poetic associations of what different body sensations can be, here Kat and her co-designer give us specific do this physicality to create this physical affect, which I think is really cool. It's related a bit to Starcross, we talked about last episode, right? Where the trepidation you feel about putting and pulling bricks mirrors the trepidation of the game. But here we have this physical touch involved where the awkwardness I might feel playing thumb wars with you mirrors the awkwardness of this awkward, I'm going to use the awkward again, this first
fumbling
makeout kind of thing, fumbling makeout kind of thing,
yeah.
Right? So I really like these games in Honey and Hot Wax.
Mm-hmm. And I think the thumb war is really interesting because it sort of starts to, like the first two games we talked about are very like poetic, expressive via touch. This one starts to point to something more specific, like it's still symbolic, but it has like a direction that it's trying to sort of point your mind in. And then do we want to talk about Arzamandi next?
Yeah, that's our spotlight mechanic, mainly because it's very famous and it kind of is at this, it's at the middle of the two poles of ideas we want to talk about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell us a bit about Arzamandi?
So Arzamandi was created by Emma Weislander in 2001 for a very specific LARP called Between Heaven and Sea, which is based on an Ursula Le Guin novel about this. Anyway, go look it up. But the point is, she specifically wanted to make an encoded, this is how our characters will have sex in this game when they have sex. And there's a great interview that she did with Lizzie Stark where she really talks about feeling this desire to make really specific physical mechanics that were sort of the equivalent of boffer LARPing, right? The thing that allows you to both, you know, be safe and protected, but also to feel the thrill and to feel the sense of risk and to feel like, I mean, we can talk about the intimacy of combat another day, but she was like, what's the equivalent of that? And this mechanic was really meant for this one game. And there are absolutely Nordic LARPers who, if you go onto their forums and start talking to them, will be like, it's not meant as a general, it's for this very contextual whatever. But it's so cool and so good and so useful and so fun that it has been used in tons of other contexts. So, for example, I played it in Jay Lee's game Mermaid, which is like a retelling of the Little Mermaid myth. And what it consists of is your hands can touch the other person's hands and arms and possibly up to the shoulder as the two players kind of negotiate. And you got to look in each other's eyes. Nobody talks about the looking in each other's eyes part, but Emma Weislander will tell you that's where the good stuff happens. And so it is another mechanic that is halfway between something very specific and representational and something that's totally kind of abstract and expressive. Because you get to touch each other's hands and look into each other's eyes however you want. And so even in the course of this one game I played, like, you know, a sex scene between two people who have been friends for 10 years and they're finally connecting in this way, like you can see the way that they would touch each other and the intensity of it and how they're doing it, the speed and placement of movements has this totally different flavor than, like, you know, I got to have this scene where both of us were feeling rejected and neither of us were with the person we actually wanted to be with and just kind of found each other on the beach sort of thing. And so it was this very, like, it was a very sad scene in a lot of ways. And it was great to be able to represent that touch of these sort of, like, really quick and you know, and the eye contact is very, like, mixed and, like, not very direct and infrequent. And so anyway, and
just
then
so listeners know, Alex is miming a lot of these.
I'm miming. This is for my hands touching my own wrists. This is for the audience. So, and then you can also see how, like, this very tender, delicate, gentle, you know, scene gets to look very different than, like, a super wild, exciting, you know, hookup after a club kind of scene. So it's very expressive. It's something that is, there's a great workshop for it. And again, maybe we can have a link to, there's a couple of videos of the Arzamandi workshop. And honestly, whether or not you ever use it in your game, just the workshop of, like, learning and practicing it with your other players, I think does so much to put people in the right headspace for, like, a really interesting, character-driven, emotionally expressive LARP. So yeah, created for this one specific thing, but it really hits this nice balance between specific and kind of representative and abstract, because nothing stands one-to-one with any particular sex act, but you can get the feel and the vibe of the interaction. So that's Arzamandi.
Yeah, and I love how that literally straddles the various continua that we're talking about today, right? It is neither fully figure out what you want to do, nor is it fully regimented, this physical thing means this, right? It's in the middle. Like, mm-hmm. you are doing arm touching only, and then within that space, you're doing poetic interpretation of that. And it's neither just like thumb wars meaning sex, so a very distant, abstract action, but neither is it we are now completely having sex, right? Because it is somewhat sensual. Like, me touching your bare arms, oh, it doesn't have to be bare, right? But me touching your arms in these ways can feel very sexy, right? Or can feel very romantic, intimate, sensual, all those kinds of things, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so today's spotlight mechanic is less like it encompasses everything. It's more because it's like the median mechanic, the
center, yeah. And I should note that this technique has a lot of, like, descendants, right? Other specific sex mechanics that have been created for other LARPs. And I know a little bit about them, but not enough to go off. And they're just not as well documented as Arzamandi. So again, if you start talking to Nordic LARPers, they'll be like, oh yeah, we also do this thing where you put your hand on top of the body part and then the person interacts with the hand. And, or, you know, we do this, like, stage kissing thing and you put your hands on the back. Like, there's lots more specific ones, but...
And small LARPs will always make their own. Like, when I played Beat Generation, there was a modification where you just hold hands and you wriggle hands together, you know, things like that. But that's also maybe why another reason it's a good spotlight mechanic, because it's very adaptable, right?
Yeah.
Just doing a thing about, like, touching another body part, a specific body part in various ways. Like, I can imagine, I don't know, if we're playing a game about aliens that don't see, like, there might be a mechanic where I put my hands over your face or your eyes in some way and sexually rub your face. I don't know, right? So it's very thought-provoking. Right? It's very rich for designers to mine thoughts at all. But then we go from these abstract, non-representational physical things to more representational physical things, right? So there are many LARPs where, especially this is very popular in the Nordic traditions, where if you are representing sex between two characters, you simulate it. Like, you have your clothes on, or you have, some LARPs have a rule that you must have your bottom underwear on, for example. And you, like, dry hump each other, right? So on the one hand, if your thought is that this brings the most realism and doing the most realistic act is the most immersive, if you think that's the case, that this is a mechanic you might want to use, right? But I don't think that's always the case in LARP. I don't think it's always true that the more realistic something feels, the more immersed you are in the game, right?
Yeah, totally. And there's a lot of, like, beauty in the design and in the abstraction. Like, LARP is always an abstraction, right? We're not just literally doing things. We are in some way representing them. and that can be more mechanized or more sort of what they used to call it 360 immersion or like realism or whatever. And yeah, there's lots of dry humping is pretty popular. It's used in officially or unofficially in a lot of systems. But also there's some interesting critiques where people are like, well, that's not a representation of sex. That is sex, though. Right. Like to lots of people, that is a sex act. And so it's like, I've literally read forum threads where people are like, you can't just say, oh, our sex mechanic is fellatio. Like you have to give me something that is not sex if you're trying to represent something.
Which is interesting, right? Because when I was at House of Craving, I really started thinking about this idea of, so House of Craving, I've spoken about it before. I spoke about it at a separate episode with Sam, and I mentioned it earlier in the series, so I won't go through it all over again. But it has this mechanic of like dry humping stuff. It's very, very, very representational simulationist that way. But I did notice this tension between why am I here in this LARP for each player, right? Some people are there because they're like, I want to play this LARP about messed up sexuality. And some people are there because I want to do simulated sex acts with people. I don't think either of those impulses are bad impulses, right?
Totally.
People should be allowed to do simulated sex acts with people if they want to. The tension came because not everyone had the same expectations. So if I come and being like, I'm really keen on deep character exploration about what messed up, fucked up sexual relations are, or I came in here to this LARP because I want to fool around with lots of people and rub against them a lot. And if these two humans meet, there might be a clash of expectations, right? And that's similar to what Alex is saying, that some LARPers don't want this act that feels too sexual because they want to focus on other parts of LARP and they don't want actual sexuality to get into that, right? And I don't think either of these are wrong or right or whatever, but I think these are intentional design choices a lot of designers have to make and then communicate what is happening in the LARP so that people can come in with their expectations and things, right? Like, this is what's going to happen. Doing abstract sex acts may allow you to immerse in certain emotional qualities more, at least for some people, right? Or if you have partner boundaries with your partner and things like that, right? Doing these abstract things allow you to play these LARPs, to play romance, sexuality, intimacy in these LARPs without breaking those boundaries. Or it could just be that maybe, and I don't think anything's wrong with this, you can't just dry hump someone you're not actually attracted to, right?
Yeah.
That isn't a fun thing for you, right?
Yeah.
You might be able to do Arsamandi with random people you're not attracted to. And obviously in a lot of, you don't know if you're going to be attracted to people. There's actually a lot of thought behind romance and bodies and LARP, like what happens if you are role-playing someone who you are role-playing a romance but you're not actually into them. There's a lot of talk about trans players feeling excluded because people are perceiving them as different genders. There's a scholarship about this, right? And so there is a lot to be said about, like, should we be very simulationist in dry humping and should we not, right?
Yeah.
But an interesting thing, a side comment, I wasn't entirely sure where to organize this in our discussion today, but Justin Loving, which we talked about last time, using the phallus and using representational stuff, has a really interesting mechanic as an aside where after you're done with a sex scene, you stand back to back with the other player or players that you have the sex scene with, and you say the first thing that's going through your character's head right after the sex scene. Now, obviously, the saying part is really powerful, but the physicality of this is also quite powerful, right? Because you are standing back to back, so you are touching each other. You're mimicking closeness, you are literally close, you're mimicking intimacy, but also you are not looking at each other when saying these things, right? Alex, you just mentioned this idea of, in Arsamandi, looking into each other's eyes is where the, quote, good stuff happens, end quote. So not looking into each other's eyes and confessing these things, which could be wildly different. I could, going through my head could be, oh my God, I had such a lovely time with this man, I want to see him again. And Alex, going through your head could be like, yes, I revenge fucked the person who had sex with my ex-boyfriend. Yes, now I feel good, right? And not looking into his eyes can be very, very powerful like that, right?
Yeah, there's obviously something interesting and intense that's happening as you turn back to back. Like, that is a kind of physical act that, I mean, it also is this, like, clear sign, like, okay, this scene is over now, and we're kind of, like, returning to the game. We're like, exiting this thing, but yeah, I don't know. I want to think, because you're right. When you're looking into each other's eyes, something is happening in the nervous system. And yeah, I wish to think more or know more about what happens when two people are standing back to back. What does the nervous system make of that?
Yeah. Maybe we should make more games about people standing back to back, Allie.
Oh my gosh, maybe. Let's do just more and more abstractions.
More.
Got her.
Here we go!
Oh my god, he threw,
here
he
we
threw
go!
The chair.
He threw the chair.
And now he's getting it back all because right. We're gonna have to sit.
We are in Casey's home. That was Casey's actual chair.
You look out of the window and you see a Toyota Previa upside down on fire.
Oh my god. Oh.
But it's not nearby any trees or anything, so it's fine.
On fire.
It's fine. It's not fine to me, GM. Jesus Christ, that's my fucking car.
Dynamite headbutt.
He screams as he headbutts this man.
Honestly, his left jaundiced eyeball pops out of his head.
Oh! And if you were to take a picture the second their two heads were touching, it might have been an intimate, tender scene between friends or lovers. But if you were to take a picture at any other second, yeah. It is just absolutely horrifying.
For some men, violence is a form of intimacy, which is so sad.
That is
maybe
so
for
sad.
This man. But anyway. Boom! Smashed in the head!
Bodhi has a pocket full of, like, one oversized precious moment angel that has a real strange face.
Oh, I thought that was your dick.
Oh! It was his dick. There's a hole in his pocket and his penis, which does resemble a precious moment angel with a strange face.
Oh, it's a strange face, but it actually looks like a pretty normal penis head.
That's what we call facts.
He looks back and he says one last threatening phrase, pointing into the bar.
I'm gonna. And Violet shoots him in the head.
You see this guy's ear get blown off, flying off his head.
Ah! Bye bye.
And then at this point, Scratch pops up like a mummy.
Ah, mummy!
Dynamite headbutt!
Something is rising, piecing itself together from the bodies and viscera around it. Its black wings spread, and it looks back at you with red, wet eyes.
Got her.
This episode of Dice Exploder is sponsored by Hero Forge. Hero Forge offers fully customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, all within your browser. And these minis come in a variety of materials, including bronze, color standees, and color plastic options, or download model files for your minis and 3D print their unique designs right in your own home. Hero Forge also has custom printed dice where they'll stick your favorite mini floating inside a die or put that mini on a keychain. Hero Forge custom acrylic keychains are printed at the same scale as the rest of Hero Forge minis and arrive already attached to a high quality zinc alloy lobster clasp so you can take your favorite character wherever you go. Hero Forge is constantly expanding its catalog of customization options, adding new parts every week, so check back in and see what you've missed. Visit heroforge.com to start designing your custom miniature and dice today. This episode of Dice Exploder is brought to you by Die Meta Dungeon. Die Meta Dungeon is a campaign-length, dungeon-based adventure for the Die RPG that is also a crawl through 60 years of tabletop RPG history. In Die Meta Dungeon, your characters will enter a massive dungeon that grows deeper and more dangerous as more people succumb to the honeyed allure of role-playing games. Dungeon crawl your way through every era of gaming, from the 1970s to the present day, one decade per dungeon level. Survive to the end, and you might learn something. For the first time in the Die RPG, player characters will get to return to the real world between levels of the dungeon, trying to juggle their real-life problems, and maybe even apply some of the important things they've learned about themselves in the dungeon, before being drawn inexorably back into the meta dungeon. It's a classic fantasy mega dungeon campaign with a postmodern twist, and at least 6 months of sessions baked into it. Die Meta Dungeon is on BackerKit through April 2026. This episode of Dice Exploder is brought to you by Orbital Blues Month. 1 month, 6 creators, an entire outlaw galaxy to explore. Orbital Blues is an RPG of sad space cowboys where your crew of desperate and downtrodden outlaws travel across a music-infused space western universe filled with retro-future technology plagued by heartbreak and the haunting shadow of the blues. And through the end of April on BackerKit, 6 creators are all running projects that expand the Orbital Blues universe. Check out Outlaws and Corporations from Soul Muppet Publishing, a book filled with NPCs, adventures, and setting inspiration. Formula Infinity from Plus One EXP, a high-octane space racing adventure complete with bespoke mechanics for racing. Or A Fistful of Stars from Stations, an interwoven series of adventures set on an interstellar train line. Or any of three other projects. Each project also comes with a soundtrack from Behold, which you're listening to part of right now, and which you can get as a limited edition cassette tape when you back multiple projects. Orbital Blues Month through the end of April on BackerKit. Check it out.
So then the next level, going from like this sort of simulation, is logically games that literally ask you to perform sex acts, to have sexual contact with the other players, right?
Mm-hmm. And maybe like a quick side note that this happens in games all, I don't want to say all the time, but it happens in games whether or not you tell people to. Like, I've absolutely heard stories from like people doing boffer LARPs, which are like sort of medieval combat things weekend long in the woods, that feel a bit more D&D-ish in aesthetic, but you're like running around and doing simulated combat. Like, I've absolutely have heard of people just having in-character sex at those things. And they should. That sounds amazing. That sounds super hot.
And because I know that people mm-hmm. have sex using role play. Like, this is a
sexual role play.
This is not an uncommon sexual act, right? I have done this many times. I've done all kinds of scenes. The first time I did it properly with someone, I got so into the scene, the guy had to like remind me, hey, are we going to have sex or not? Because we were doing frat bro role play, and I got really into this character who's like a closet. I love narrative, like books and stories about closeted characters coming out. Like, it just appeals to me a lot. So I really got into this character. And then my partner, the dude I was looking up with, had to like nudge me, like, are we going to have sex?
Is this going to become sex at some point?
Right.
And this makes me wonder. Many people have told me the stories of, we played StarCrossed and then we immediately had sex. And like, now I'm wondering, at what point did they stop playing StarCrossed? Like, were they still in character when they were boning, and if so, does that count as part of the game where, fruitful.
And that was the driving impulse that started Lucian and me talking about Honey and Hot Wax as an anthology, right? I mean, we started with, let's think about game that involves sex acts. Then as we talked, we expanded the idea to games about sex in different ways. We started with what happens to narrative, to character, to story, to this permeable membrane between the ludic space in-game diegesis and the real world, right? Talk about Gallagher and find different like frames of play. This idea of this the magic circle, like penetrating this magic circle, like what happens when you start having sex? Have we changed relationship? All kinds of things, right? And so we thought, Alex and I thought, it would be really good to bring in two of the games from the book that ask you to have sex act, right? The first one is Lucian Khan's In the Clefts of the Rock, where you play as, let's say you're four players, each of you plays a surreal landscape, and you define what you are. You are a field of rocks made of jade dripping honey, for example. You can be something like, I'm a desert, whatever. And you are exploring these landscapes. So to explore the landscapes, you as the landscape will tell me certain verbs that I'm allowed to do onto certain parts of your body. So the parts of the body are knees, the second round is mouths, third round is genitals. And you will tell me what verbs you want me to do on those parts. So stroke, lick, tap, palpitate, rub, nudge, punch, right? And so let's say you are a field of rocks made of jade bleeding honey. We will then narrate a scene where I'm an explorer, exploring the landscape, and I will be doing those verbs you gave me too. So I'll be like stroking your knee or tickling your knee or slapping your mouth or whatever, right? As we build the story onto this landscape. I think it's really powerful for a reason that's less the focus of our talk, of our podcast, because I think this, as a trans designer, I'm not a trans designer. Lucian is a trans designer. Sorry. Lucian is a designer who is a trans man. This game, to me, talks about what happens when we layer truth stories, narratives onto bodies, right? Like, we put stories onto bodies. Like, we say, this body is attractive. This body is fat. This body is masculine. This body is feminine. This body is normal, right? These are truths, stories, ideas we layer onto bodies. So this game forces you to examine that, how we layer onto bodies. But also, like, at the end of the game, you are touching each other's genitals. So what does it mean to be touching your genitals in a game that's not sexy at all in narrative, right? All these other games have an element of romance, sexuality, sensuality, intimacy. This is a game about exploring landscapes, right? It's not meant to portray romance and intimacy in that way. So what does this discongruence do, right? Where I am, I have played this game where someone is literally jerking me off while describing it. And I'm like, oh God, you are jerking me off. And that will provoke certain emotional, physical reactions from me. But I'm also being like, yeah, and so you're climbing the castle and the stones are cold in the morning and blah, 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 right? So what is going on there, right? I think Lucian's game is probably, for me, one of the most thought-provoking games in that collection.
Absolutely. And when we think about what that game says about sex, positioning it as an exploration, like it's a non-linear exploration of sex. Well, it's linear, I guess, in the sense that you are going from this spot to that spot to that spot. But I mean that it's not organized by sex act. It doesn't specify a sex act. Like, it's just verbs, actions, and spaces. And portraying the body as a landscape and the other person as an explorer, like, sets you into a particular dynamic that is not exactly equal. It's not like Arzamandi, where you two are both doing the exact same thing to each other, but actually creates an active and receptive partner in a way that is not super, like, power loaded exactly, but is, like, exploratory, like, has a lot of curiosity there. I mean, that says a lot about, I mean, this is really making statements about good sex, right? Good sex as being, having a lot of communication involved and being an exploration and being an open-minded curiosity and interest and invitation. And, oh, I love that.
And, like, the variety of verbs that can constitute exploration / sex, right? Yeah. That can feel in various ways, right? Like I'm an S&M practitioner. I know people who are like, no, hit me as hard as you can in the balls. This is sexy for me, right?
Yeah.
Great, right? So, another thing. The other game I'd like to talk about in that collection is, disclaimer, my game, right? So The Echo of the Unsaid again falls under in the camp of not, like, Lucian's game again has some controlled movement. Like, the game tells you to do, like, you define a verb, only one body part, but also lets you choose the verbs. And also, it does, the game doesn't have a specific intent of what each verb is supposed to convey, right? So in Cat's game, doing thumb wars is meant to convey awkwardness, while here it is meant to create exploratory. My game, I think, falls in a different sort of camp, right? So in The Echo of the Unsaid, you play very specific characters. You have names, you have ideas about your character. You play two male frat boys. The players don't have to be male or mask, but you are playing male mask frat boys who are attracted to each other but never acknowledge it, okay? And you play three scenes. They're very specific scenes. And in between each scene, the game asks you to do very specific sexy things with each other. So at the end of the first scene, one of you gives the other a hand job. And again, if you don't have dicks, you do other kinds of manual stimulation.
Hand job in the most inclusive sense of that term.
In this, after the second scene, you give each other blowjobs in the most exclusive sense. Not each other. One person gives the other, because fraternity, power dynamic.
Power.
And then the third scene, at the end of it, you make out. And then at the end of the game, you stare into each other's eyes for 30 seconds. I think it's 30 seconds. A large amount of time, I, like, picked that. And so the other thing is, in this game, it's called The Echo of the Unsaid because you are never allowed to talk in character about the sex acts you just did with each other. Because these sex acts you did in character. So I, as frat boy one, gave a hand job to frat boy two in character. It isn't abstract at all. But then we as characters cannot speak. We as players obviously can. But we as characters cannot think about it because the whole idea is this repressed sexuality. So here, I think it's different from the other games in that the physical act doesn't symbolically stand for anything. It just is.
It just is what it is.
You are giving each other a hand, and in the game, you are giving the hand job, and you construe in the mind of your character and cannot really tell the other person what that meant to your character, right?
Yeah.
So instead of the game being about a different physical act, standing in for sex and what, and you explore those stand-ins, here, sex stands for other things. This tension between the two characters, the repressed desire, the societal pressure, gender expectations, all this kind of thing. So that's what I was trying to do with this game. I have, as you can might imagine, audience, it is hard to find people to play test this game. I have definitely had a few people play test this game, and it has, I think, had interesting effects, the kinds of ones I want. But maybe you should play this game, audience, and see what you think.
More people should play the games in the Honey and Hot Wax anthology of role-playing games. That's an opinion that I do hold.
Right? Naomi Clark has a great bit in the intro where she talks about just reading the game is also an intellectual act, which I highly agree with. And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. But also, hey, try playing the game.
Give it a shot. Get in there. Right? Yeah, right?
But this is a game that uses, again, specific sex acts to try and create specific effect. Right? There's a reason I have making out at the end and not at the start, right? Like, what does it mean to make out for these two frat boys versus what does it mean to, like, give a blowjob, right? Or a bro job, as it's sometimes known as, right? Are you familiar with the term?
No, I really love that, though. Yeah. And again, in the most inclusive sense of the word.
Right. It's a bro job is supposed to be...
it's not gay if it's your bro.
Exactly. It's supposed to be, I just need to get off. I need this sort of stimulation. Can you give it to me? But it's not, no feelings.
But just like, because, you know, whatever.
No homo.
Yeah, no homo.
Right? I don't know if it's a real thing or if it's just a thing from porn. Though, if it's a thing from porn, it might be a real thing because of people watching porn.
Because of the effect of then, cinema teaches us how to desire.
But so this is a game that uses full-on sex, but very specific ones. But then there are other games. I'm going to a multi-day LARP in fall called Monstrosity. It's about, like, fucked up sadist vampires. But that game is a game that, again, I don't think I have to repeat this, but I will. It's very well thought out. They have a lot of calibration mechanics. They have a lot of buy-in and workshop, whatever. But in that game, we can just have sex with each other in-game, in-character, right?
Yeah.
And it's meant to be sort of talking about violence. It might be very S&M sex. There might be a lot of consensual non-consent and things like that, right? So again, you can have full-on sex, but rather than being very directed to cause specific reactions like I was attempting, they are like doing that freeform route of what do different things, like in the poetic way, what does this mean to you? But also in a not poetic way, in the literal way of, great, we are simulating me beating you. Right?
Yeah, by beating you. Yeah.
I am literally like, you join the game with a partner, and the person who's going to play my partner, I know him. I have never hooked up with him. We literally have set up multiple hookup dates before the LARP to be like, let us get practice hooking up with each other so that we are comfortable with each other's bodies before the LARP, where we're going to be LARPing having sex with each other and actually have sex with each other, right? Especially because I will be playing the role of an S&M top and he'll be playing the role of an S&M bottom. Like, and, you know, S&M dynamics can be so different between different people.
Totally,
So we are literally practicing the sex we're going to have, sort of, before the game, which is interesting. And again, the problem is I can't speak too much about this yet because I haven't played it yet. Maybe I'll ask Sam if he wants to do a special episode just about this thing with both of us, all three of us in the episode, maybe.
Oh my gosh, we could do a Where Are They Now?
Right,
6 months from now,
Exactly. That could be a fun one. But I want to put this on people's radar in that this exists, right?
That this is real.
Right? And of course, like we talk about sexual role play, people do all kinds of things with games and sex, like, you know, sexy dice that you roll and do things to each other. Or like, I was talking to this guy on Recon once. Recon is a hookup app for S&M for queer men. And I talked to this guy, and he was telling me how he's done things where him and a bunch of other dudes rent a cabin, and they do a lot of, like, play Super Smash Brothers, and whoever loses gets to be the cum dump for the night, and then whoever doesn't do this has to, like, I don't know, rim all the other guys, or whatever, right? So there are all these other ways of introducing play into sex, and these LARPs kind of are doing it from the other angle. It's play first sex. Well, not really play first, but, like, narrative first, I would say.
Getting to sex through play, or right, as we're getting getting to play via the interest of sex. And because I think people are inventing game mechanics all the time. I mean, whenever you're topping someone, you're coming up with mechanics, right? If you do this, I will do this.
Right.
And, you know, or when this happens, this other thing will happen. And like you said, people are doing freeform sexual role play all the time. And particularly like people who do online role play and the whole world of erotic role play, which is its own like of online erotic role play, which is its own like 18-part series, right? That someone who knows a lot more than me could do. Like those folks are using D&D and other systems and are like, hey, come play D&D with me and we'll use the mechanics a little bit, but they will be oriented around your character having an extremely sexually charged adventure.
Right.
And I love that.
So let's move on to, obviously, like Alex mentioned, this is a intro sort of four-part series.
Mm-hmm.
Is there ever going to be a comprehensive thing? Probably not, because art is always changing and renewing and things. There are so many games that we haven't talked about, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of games that have been very influential on me that I don't think have gotten a mention. Obviously, Avery Alder's A Place to Fuck Each Other is, it's about queer women trying to hook up and or move in, and as a three-player game, and I highly recommend it. Everything by Aura Bell, Kirigami Dominatrix Display Simulator, is like a game where you tear up paper in a representation of dominating another person. It defies explanation. You just got to check it out. And as we've both been, I think, alluding to many times, like there is so much new stuff that we have not played or read or even probably know about.
New games like Praise the Hawk Moth King. Vice and Violence isn't that new, but, you know, newer to us. Sapphic World. You mentioned Orc Fuck. These are all games that Alex and I haven't even had a chance to play. The problem with being a game professional is, oh my God, there's so many games
when we get
to playing them, versus also making them, versus also thinking and writing about them, versus also teaching them.
So we just will both, I think, want to recognize that like we have probably not mentioned your favorite sexiest game. And God, I feel like I barely even talked about Paranoia, the sexiest game ever made. Anyway, that's a discussion for another day. So that's great. Like, please keep learning and tell us and at us. And
to conclude thus our four-part series, I'm going to read an excerpt of a poem by Sam Sachs called Heavy Petting. I don't know if this poem, I've never seen a written version of this. I've only seen a performed version of this. So Alex and I literally like listened to it and transcribed it. So I'm going to read an excerpt out for us. It's called Heavy Petting, and it's a roller coaster of a poem, but I'm going to read one of the emotions in the poem. There are many different emotions in the poem. So, quote, "Why not let the throat name each new act that happens to it? The vocal cords, a constant chorus of naming and invention. The phrase dry humping makes me want to gag when I speak it. I think it's the vowel sounds, the umps, the umping, to ump. Gag, though, is a great word. It sounds exactly how it happens, an action choked out of the body or down into it, vibrating on desire's thin, repulsive wire."
Oh, I love it. Amazing.
So think about that poem and how physicality of sex and symbolism of sex and talking about sex and using props, thin repulsive wires, all kinds of things that we've talked about in these four episodes. Please keep the conversation going. I know Sam has a very active Discord for Dice Exploder. Alex and I are both on Blue Sky. Talk to us. And with that, let's give our closing.
Absolutely. So I'm Hello Alex Roberts on Blue Sky. I'm Hello Alex Roberts on my Patreon. I have a bunch of projects that might be of interest if you're interested in sexy role-playing games. I would actually say For the Queen is a game that is about desire. Starcrossed we've talked about a ton, and Starcrossed also has a new supplement called Love Letters that teaches you to play Starcrossed in a variety of different settings, and also as a solo journaling game, and as a three-player game, and as an online game.
And I am Sharung Biswas. You can find me on Blue Sky at Sharung Biswas. You can also check out my itch.io, which is astrolingus.itch.io. I'll plug my book again, The Iron Below Remembers. On my itch, you can find a collective erotica called Tome of Dark Delights, except that it's erotica themed on the Dungeons & Dragons character classes. And they also have a small game mechanic at the end of each to put into your game if you like. And of course, both of us worked on Honey and Hot Wax, an anthology of erotic art games published by Pelgrane Press. So with that, thank you so much, Sam, for letting us take over your podcast for a bit.
Definitely do Sam's homework or you will be punished. Okay, bye, everybody.
Thanks again to Alex and Sharon so much for being here for this series. My homework for you today is to go read or play at least one game mentioned by Alex or Sharon at some point in this series, and think about how does that game make you feel, both as you read it, and then again as you play it, and then again as you debrief with whoever you played it with. Then, if you like, come back and share with the class. Alex and Sharon may be gone next week, but I'll be back myself with two more episodes on sex and romance. Our logo is designed by Sporgery, our theme song is Sunset Bridge by Purely Gray, and our ad music is Lily Pad from a boy, Travis Tesmer. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next time. Mwah!